think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 269 of Low Limit Football on this 20th of January, 2020. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, Germany returns to play after the long winter break, and it's the new starlet making big headlines. We're going to discuss that in just a few moments. Liverpool grows their league in the Premier League, prompting us to ask the question, can they go unbeaten in the league this season? Barcelona and Real Madrid both win on the weekend and now extend their lead to 8 points over Sevilla and Atleti. Has this become a two-team race at this point? And Victor Moses is on the verge of completing his move to Inter. We're going to discuss that and many more interesting rumors with our special guest from Gianluca DiMarzio. Claudio Perforetto will be joining us in just a few minutes. But first, let me get my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas, in here. How are you, my man?
How are you, Joe? Very well, thanks. Happy that we are all secluded inside and not in this really brutal cold weather that we've been having lately. So, yeah, I'm happy to be back, back after a few weeks of a break. But a lot to discuss in the world of football, I must say.
Yeah, absolutely. We have, you know, like I said in the monologue, Germany gets back started again. We're going to talk about the big stuff there. A couple of hat tricks. We're going to talk about the guy that leads all of Europe in goal scoring, which I don't think any of us would have imagined that this would be the name that we'd talk about, but it currently is. There's just a lot of moving parts going on right now. We haven't even hit the Champions League yet. So, a lot of exciting stuff going on for sure. No doubt about it. Let's jump into the show proper because I know our guest will be along with us in just a few minutes. Let's start off with the trivia question, my friend, because it's your honor, Your Honor.
Ooh, that's right. Let me just go find it real quick.
No problem.
It right here with me. Just give me 1 second.
Yep. So while you're looking for that, obviously last week we didn't have a show. It's completely my fault. I ended up coming down with the flu. Who knew you could get the flu? And, you know, after getting a flu shot, but I managed to get the flu. I was down and out for a few days. But I guess one of the benefits of having the flu shot was that it allowed me to recover faster so we could talk tonight. Otherwise, we might actually be sitting this week out as well, Rob. But, glad that we're back up and on the road and running here again. And even though we had to scrap what was really a jam-packed show last week that we had planned, I think we've got a pretty good one in store tonight for everybody. Especially, like I said, with Germany coming back, with a lot of some MLS moves that we're going to talk about tonight as well.
Yeah.
Rob. So that's a pretty interesting thing as well. So, you know, we forget that league is literally around the corner. And now with the CONCACAF Champions League coming in, you're going to see us talk a little bit more about MLS and a lot of those teams as they kick off those competitions for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
All right, so I'll go with my trivia question. Just a simple one. Messi has played, obviously we saw him score over the weekend as well.
Mm-hmm.
In Quique Setién's first game in charge as Barcelona manager, and we'll obviously get to that in a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to give you a simple question.
Mm-hmm.
In Messi's last 500 Barcelona games, how many goals has he scored?
That's interesting. So in the last 500 games, how many goals has he scored? All competitions?
All competitions.
Not like it's going to matter because I'm going to be totally giving you a guess, but that's a great question. Let me ask you, I don't know if you have this information handy. Where does he rank in that time frame? Do you have anything like that? I'm just curious as, you know, because obviously the battle would be him or Cristiano. And we do have a goal scoring show tonight. So I was just curious if you might have.
You're talking about like between both of them or just in all time?
Just all time. Where they kind of all stand right now. I don't know if you had that handy at all.
Yeah, let me go check.
And obviously don't give me numbers because that'll skew my answer.
No, but I'll give you the all-time stats.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
At the moment, Messi has, and this is from the MessiVersusRonaldo.net website, at the moment, Messi has 690 goals in 846 matches. Cristiano Ronaldo has 718 goals in 992 matches all-time in his career.
Insane amount of goals. But that's the fun of watching them. You know, and like you said, Messi scoring a goal on the weekend, actually for the win against, if I remember correctly, Granada.
Mm-hmm.
Juve with two Cristiano Ronaldo goals in a 2-1 win over Parma. So they just keep doing what they do. So
yes, pretty absolutely. Cool stuff.
Let's jump into opening thoughts tonight. And opening thoughts is great because, like I had alluded to earlier, Germany gets back into league action this weekend. You know, we've obviously seen a tight race at the top of the German Bundesliga. You know, we've been commenting on it all along, although we've got a little bit of separation, Rob, at the moment, because we see RB Leipzig leading the way right now with 40 points after matches on the weekend, 4 points ahead of Bayern Munich. But then it gets tight. Bayern at 36, Gladbach at 35, Dortmund, Schalke at 33, Leverkusen at 31 points. So there's still, you know, quite a ways to go in Germany, to say the least. And we're at the exact halfway point. But the interesting stuff this week that we want to talk about with our opening thoughts is the debut of Erling Haaland at Borussia Dortmund. Comes in, if I remember correctly, as a sub on the weekend, Rob.
Yep.
And just only scores a hat trick, you know, nothing too fancy there in a 5-3 victory over Augsburg. Comes into the match, I want to say, when they were actually down 3-1. Mm-hmm. Enters the match in the 56th minute, 59th, 70th, and 79th minute. Three goals. The last goal in the 79th minute, there was a parallel to Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, where both of them were wearing the number 17. They both scored their third goal in a hat trick in their debut match in the 79th minute. So massive parallels to a pretty good striker there. Obviously, Haaland is not afraid of the spotlight, or not afraid to have it, you know, totally thrust upon him. But a massive, massive performance. And one thing I noticed about him, Rob, that you get to watch him a little closer in that debut in the Bundesliga with Dortmund, he's got some deceptive speed on him. He's a big lumbering guy, but when he can turn it on, he can turn it on. Massive investment for Dortmund in this time, a team known for developing young talent, and he's certainly one of them. We saw some folks talk about maybe the lack of defending in Germany, and I would actually extend that to the lack of defending in Europe in general. You know, we can talk about that in a couple minutes, but I want your thoughts on Haaland's debut, what it means for Dortmund, what it means for his career, you know, what it means for the Bundesliga the rest of the way.
Well, I think what we saw in this Champions League in the group stage of how much this guy was an absolute gem. I think what we saw in his appearances of scoring in almost every game in the group stage, even though Salzburg didn't qualify for the round of 16, you know, the fact that he was just so impressive and being able to score in almost all the games there just proves that this guy really has what it takes to make that big jump. And, you know, when all the likes of Manchester United, Liverpool, you know, all the big, big clubs that were interested in Haaland's services, there was one team that, you know, really was probably up there, but really wasn't considered by the mass majority of us, was Borussia Dortmund. The fact that they were able to get this kid at 20 million euros, after seeing that performance over the weekend, you're thinking to yourself, wow, that's a bargain right there, because that is a performance of more than just 20 million and rightly deserved. You know, I was listening to an interview that he made, and he was talking to the director of Borussia Dortmund, Michael Zorc, he kind of jokingly said, you know, that that's why I'm here. That's why you bought me, to score goals. And rightly served. I mean, you know, that was kind of the big skepticism given to someone who was going to make that jump from Austria to Germany. You know, how is he going to fare? You know, is he good enough? Is he strong enough? And pff, you look at this guy, and he's been impressive. I mean, to score three goals, to score a hat-trick is great, but to do it on your debut as a sub when your team is losing, to have that grit, to have that heart, to have that determination to do it at 19 years old, I mean, this guy's a phenomenon. I think he really is on top. And like I said, I think when we first saw this transfer be completed, I think we think to ourselves that, yeah, this is a good move for him because he's able to develop as a top player, you know, because of the reputation that Borussia Dortmund had of developing young talent, you know, the likes of your Jadon Sanchos, your Christian Pulisic, you know, the likes of Mario Götze in the past, Lewandowski, even though he wasn't really a young talent, but, you know, did well there before going to Bayern Munich, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, you know, so many talented players that have been to that Borussia Dortmund setup. And I think Haaland's just the next player as part of the rotating I'm trying to think of the word right here, but the conveyor belt of young talents coming through and all across Europe. So yeah, it's fantastic. I think for his career, it's done great. I think he has to keep it up. I think now the expectations come a bit bigger for a player like him, and I think he's in the right spot. And now we just got to take it game by game. See how he develops. Man, at 19, if you're a defender and you're trying to deal with someone that's 6'4 and doing something like that, wow, be prepared. That's all I could say.
And he's currently second in Champions League scoring behind Robert Lewandowski. Lewandowski has 10 goals. He has 8. He does get to get back into that competition now, making the move from Salzburg to Dortmund, where they're going to face PSG. So he'll be in the knockout stages there. He's the fourth biggest transfer so far in this transfer window at £19.2 million behind Dejan Kulusevski going to Juve, Renier Jesus, which just happened from Flamengo to Real Madrid, and Stanislav Wobocka going from Celta Vigo to Napoli. You know, it's a massive weight on his shoulders in terms of price tag. But really, when we talk about some of these big moves, Rob, not quite the price tag that we've seen for a lot of other young talents. You know, Ousmane Dembele was $100 million. Christian Pulisic, who just left Dortmund, was 70 million. We've seen big, big numbers.
Joao Felix,
100 million. Even Kylian Mbappe recently. I mean, we're talking about massive talents, but I think one of the benefits for this kid is that the price tag was small comparatively, right? You've seen players crumble under that number. And this kid, as cocky as he is, as confident as he is, I mean, he's not Zlatan cocky, but he's close.
He's starting to look that way. I mean, he's the same height, and he obviously could score, and he's a striker. So
he's got a little bit of attitude on him.
And he has that, if you've seen his sound bites that he's spoken about. I mean, there is a little bit of a parallel. Obviously, you can't make a complete comparison and say, oh, this guy's the next Zlatan or something, but you know, it's there, and it's right. He's supporting himself because of the performances that he's putting in. Sure. Now he has to continue that, and we'll start to value him much, much more.
Yeah, if you got to talk the talk, you got to walk the walk, right? And that's exactly what he's doing, and there's no better way to walk that walk than to come out on your debut in the last 20 minutes of a match and score 3 goals. Massive achievement for the kid, and certainly now in a league. Because obviously being at Salzburg, you don't have as many eyeballs on you. When you hit one of the top 5 leagues, you hit a team like Dortmund that does have massive viewership around the world week in and week out, a team that's in Champions League, a team that is challenging for the Bundesliga title. There's going to be a lot more eyeballs, and the eyeballs also bring pressure, let alone, you know, the price tag we've talked about. He's going to have that additional pressure on his head now moving forward in the league and in the season. And, you know, dependent upon what Dortmund do in the next round, because obviously, you know, facing PSG is no easy task. So it's going to be interesting to see how he performs against a extremely talented side in Paris Saint-Germain. It's going to be interesting to see how he does when we hit the Der Klassiker against Bayern Munich and some of these other matches in the German Bundesliga as a challenge for that title, because then you'll really get his medal. But I think until then, we probably, you know, we've seen the book of business so far from Erling Braut Haaland. And I think the business is good. I think the business is smart on Dortmund's side. I think it's a great spot, like you said, for him to go to a place that has developed young talent. And I think he's going to pay dividends very early and very often. And then the next question will be is not so much how much or when, but how much will that next price tag be on his head?
And I think as well, I mean, obviously the league is far from over in the Bundesliga, but wouldn't it be great for him to return a medal and win that Bundesliga because of his performances?
I think they would put it right on his shoulders if that were the case, right? If that happened, you know, all of a sudden he scores, let's say, 15 goals for the rest of the way in the Bundesliga. Don't you think they would put that on his shoulders as he's the guy that did it?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, the fact that he's beating a streak of, what, 7 straight titles for Bayern Munich, something like that, 6-7. But and to do that in your second half of the season on your debut at 19, my God, this is crazy. I think his value is, I'm pretty sure after this weekend, you know, that 20 million, that's shot right up twice. And now if he wins the Bundesliga or continue, that's... Man, I'm telling you, I mean, obviously it's so early to say. I mean, it's one game. We can't judge one player on one game, regardless of how he does. But if he continues like this, this is good. This is a guy that's going to hit the 100 million.
Yeah.
100 million easily. And maybe if we go to the extreme matters, why not go bigger? 150, 200. But let's keep it down. Let's top it. Let's keep it down a notch and just appreciate how. And you know what's one of the biggest jokes for me? Joe, I look at him. He just looks like someone that was created at like some secret lab from a mad scientist. I mean, look at him. It's crazy. Yeah. Don't tell me I'm the only one that thinks that way.
No, he's a big physical specimen. That's for sure. He's definitely a big guy. You know, and that's why I said at the beginning, he's got a lot of for a guy that's big, he's got a lot of speed. You know, which was deceptive. And I think I want to say it was the third goal. That kind of threw everybody off, that he kind of turned the jets on and he was able to move quickly down the line. So, great to see, side note.
I would love to have his diet.
Yeah. Right. No kidding. Just as a side note, Giovanni Reyna made his debut in the same match on the weekend, the youngest player ever to debut in the Bundesliga, by the way, beating Christian.
And what, another cool thing as well, as we talk about Haaland, both their fathers, Claudio and, Alf, played together
in Manchester City.
That's right.
Yeah. So, and then there they were, you know, fast forward almost 20 years later to them working together on the pitch in Germany. So great story. So let's table our discussion on the German Bundesliga for the moment. I'm sure we'll be talking much, much more about him in the near future. And let's get our guest in. Again, we're lucky to have somebody from Gianluca Di Marzio join us. Claudio Perfetto is going to be joining us to talk a lot of the transfer rumors, moves, things that have happened. We've got a couple that even happened today. So without further ado, let's get Claudio Perfetto in here to discuss some of the transfer world. And joining us now from Gianluca Di Marzio, Claudio Perfetto. Claudio, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to jump on with you guys. I enjoy it.
Thanks for coming on the show. Real quick, let's jump into it because I want to talk about my Juventus. They've been a little quiet. Obviously, the Kulishevsky move that they made very, very early in the transfer window. Saw him play against his team on the weekend with the 2-1 victory for Juve over Parma. Is there anything going on with Juve? Do you think they're done? Is anything else coming up? What's going on with them right now?
Yeah, they definitely have been quiet for this transfer window, especially a club like Juve, who has been making a ton of moves in past windows and big ones at that. But tonight, Di Marzio just reported that there still are talks between Juve and Barcelona for a Bernardeschi-Rakitic swap, which would be a very interesting move for Juve. I have the feeling that Juve probably want to get rid of some players, some veteran players, before they bring anybody else in. So this kind of makes perfect sense because Bernardeschi is obviously an attacking player, which Juve have a plethora of those, especially not able to move Higuain in the summer, and he ended up staying there. And Rakitic, they could obviously use midfield help because they've made some good midfield moves, but Rakitic is a guy that is very veteran, has played in the biggest stages with Barcelona and obviously in Croatia with the World Cup. So that's a veteran player who could probably add something to Juve, and they would be offsetting that against Bernardeschi, which is someone that even though he has gotten significant playing time this season, hasn't really lit up the stats column. So that's something that I could see Juve going through with.
So real quick, Rob, before I send it over to you, I know Juve is probably looking to sell a few pieces. Obviously, they got rid of Mandzukic in this window. They got rid of the North Korean player. They actually loaned out Mattia Perin as well to Genoa. What about Emre Can? Because he's a guy that has had like zero success with getting in on the team. What do you think about him?
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of weird. We haven't heard anything necessarily about Can on the website from DiMarzio, but he is a guy that probably should move this window. But every time he's been called upon this season, you know better than me, Joe, because you watch Juve very, very closely. He seems like he has performed well, and he's, except for the few comments he made earlier in the season after he was very, very upset with being left out of the Champions League squad, he has kind of, you know, been a good professional and played hard and played well every time he's been called upon. But there really doesn't seem to be room for him in the team. So I would not be surprised if something did come up between now and the end of the window. But I think Juve is probably just waiting and trying to see what their midfield options will be. If someone like Rakitic comes in, then yeah, that definitely makes sense to move Can or somebody, one of those other midfield pieces. So they probably, want to see what they're going to do with this Bernadeschi-Rakitic swap first before they make a move like that and sell Can. Mm-hmm.
You know, going into now their direct rival, Juve's direct rival in Inter, Claudio, you know, they, even though they did do a lot of spending, I guess, back in the summer when they brought in the likes of Diego Godin and obviously Romelu Lukaku, you know, for they're still doing as much business as well, and obviously Alexis Sanchez and many other players, but they're still doing a lot of business as well from what it seems in the winter. You know, they just got Ashley Young, kind of one of those weird transfers, you would say, but I think Antonio Conte knows better than we do. They're looking at the likes of Victor Moses as well, from what I understand. Or they have agreed to personal terms, but they're also looking at the likes of players like Christian Eriksen and Arturo Vidal, among other players as well. I mean, so what's the latest over there from what you're hearing, Claudio? And why all this sudden movement? You know, are Inter really going to go all in to win that Scudetto?
Yeah, so you said it. I mean, they're Juve's direct competition this season. And, you know, up until the past couple of weeks where they dropped, you know, back-to-back games, they were ahead of Juve for most of the season. So they need to bolster the squad. I mean, if you're going to compete with Juve, you have to have depth. I mean, Napoli learned that when they lost out to Juve a few years ago in the Scudetto race, and Inter don't want that to happen to them, because Juve, I mean, they have two legitimate, really, really good starting lineups. And in order to compete with them over the course of a full Serie A season, you need to have the same thing to compete with them. And that's what Inter are trying to do. And don't forget that Beppe Marotta is now, you know, obviously the CEO on the sporting side for Inter. And he has learned in the past that you have to pretty much give Antonio Conte what he wants. So while moves like Young and Moses might seem a little odd, and Moses is all but done right now, he has his medical visit scheduled for tomorrow. Obviously, Young is already a complete transfer. They make sense because Conte has a relationship with Moses, obviously, from his days at Chelsea, and he relied on him there a lot. Young reminds me of kind of when Juve were doing things like bringing in, Patrice Evra, when Marotta was there, guys that maybe seemed a little bit over the hill in the Premier League, but came to Serie A and Conte was able to get the best out of them. So I think that has a lot to do with it. And then in terms of the midfield, Eriksen, the Auxilio, the sporting director in Inter, Eriksen, he had mentioned earlier today that they did make a formal offer to Eriksen. And now Fabrizio Romano, who is one of DiMarzio's colleagues and also a big reporter in Italy, is reporting that Inter just upped the offer to $15 million for Eriksen because they're trying to get this done while they have some control. Because if Eriksen hits the free market, bigger players like Juve and the Barcelonas and the other squads in the world are going to definitely be interested in him. So I'm sure Inter really want to get this locked up before it gets to that point to make Conte happy. And then as far as Vidal, We haven't heard anything recently about that transfer. Early in the window, there were many talks of that. I'm sure he was interested in Inter, but with the change in coach at Barcelona, it remains to be seen now if he's going to feature in their plans a little bit more and maybe not want to move away from there yet.
For sure. Now, but looking at all these possible moves, you know, do you feel that Inter are trying to make the Europa League a priority with this? Because, you know, they're still obviously one of the favorites with the likes of, you know, Arsenal, Manchester United, Roma as well, you know, many other teams that are Ajax, among the other teams. You know, do you see them making it more of a big priority for the Europa League, or are they still generally focused on the Scudetto in this race with Juve?
I think these moves are more for the Scudetto, to be honest, just because over the past few years, Italian teams really have shown that they, for whatever reason, are not very interested in the Europa League. Maybe it's the revenue that comes along with it or whatever the case may be. They never seem to focus on it. So I think that these moves are really just for depth for Inter, because they've gotten bit by the injury bug a little bit this season, and Conte has not been happy about it. He's verbally said how, you know, the squad is too small and he doesn't have that many quality players in the squad. So I think these are strictly for Serie A. They're really going to go after it, and they're close. I mean, I think at this point now they're 4 points behind Juve, which might seem like a lot, and it is, because Juve don't really drop points. You know, Juve really, for the most part, they're, if they reach a run of bad form, it usually lasts for like 1 or 2 weeks. So you don't really get that many opportunities to steal points from Juve. So Inter, I think, want to have depth in place for players that might go down, impact players that might go down, so that way they don't really miss a beat, because they know that they're not going to be able to lose that much ground to Juve and still have a chance to win the Scudetto.
Now, I want to jump in here real quick, Claudio, because there's another transfer that, or transfer rumor that's popped up that I want to talk about real quick. And that's the possible, the potential move of Suso going to Roma for Cengiz Under. For me, this doesn't entirely make a lot of sense, specifically because of the Zaniolo injury that he suffered just a couple weeks ago. Now he's going to be out for the season. You know, does it make sense for them to get rid of Under and to bring in a guy like Suso?
So it really doesn't. And, you know, the reports are that Roma really don't want to get rid of Under. It's more, I think, coming out of the Under camp, because maybe, you know, he's suffered with some injuries at Roma. He hasn't really gotten a tremendous amount of playing time. He hasn't really hit great form consistently. So he might just want a change of scenery. And the Suso Under swap, I think that's really coming more out of the Milan side, because Milan right now, they're in a tough situation with Suso. The latest report from Di Marzio is that Milan don't necessarily want to sell Suso, but since the arrival of Ibrahimovic, Suso really has seen his playing time decrease significantly. He hasn't started or even come out into the past few games at all, played a part in the games at all, since Ibrahimovic has been a part of the team. So I think Milan right now, it sounds like, even though they're not putting Suso up for sale, if an Under swap did come along, they would accept that, because they do like Under as a player. But Roma, understandably, do not want to get rid of him because of the Zaniolo injury. And he's still a very, very talented player who I think Roma really want to keep a hold of, because he's still relatively young also. So he has a big upside.
Sure, absolutely. Now, before we let you go, I mean, obviously you broke some pretty big or some interesting news coming out of Di Marzio about the possible swap between Bernardeschi and Rakitic. Is there any other news that was reported by Di Marzio tonight that would be, you know, kind of earth-shattering or earth-shaking at least?
Well, nothing too crazy, but one interesting story is Sandro Tonali, obviously the youngster at Brescia, is having a great, great season. It doesn't seem like a move is imminent for him now, because obviously Brescia don't want to get rid of him. They're in a relegation battle. They definitely can't afford to lose someone like that when they're struggling to stay up in Serie A to begin with. But they're saying that the summer market for him is really, really heating up, and it seems like he probably will move this summer to a bigger club. And the clubs that are interested in him right now and following him are obviously Inter and Juventus, which makes sense because those are two big Italian clubs. Mm-hmm. And we're better for him to move than to another Italian club. But also PSG and Manchester City are following him, which are very interesting. I mean, he's a great player already. You could see he kind of just gets it. He's one of those young players that just, you know, is one step ahead of the rest of the players on the field, and similar to Andrea Pirlo type player. So mm-hmm. I'm not surprised, but those are the rumors right now that in addition to Inter and Juve, which are two huge clubs in Italy, PSG and Manchester City are also interested in signing him this summer.
And I've seen figures floated around of somewhere in the 50 million euro mark for the 19-year-old. I mean, do you think moving in the summer window might affect that number even further north? I mean, he's a lot of folks have said this. I've even said it. He does remind me, in his style of play, a great deal amount of – he's got a lot of Pirlo in him. You know, he just mm-hmm. – from his movement, his, you know, his body movements and everything, he just – and his vision, he looks like – I mean, he's like Pirlo Jr. So – I could see where teams like Manchester City, especially a guy like Pep Guardiola that loves to have a passing type play, you know, PSG, Thomas Tuchel, another guy that has a lot of offensive talent and a lot of offensive focus in his style of play. We saw it at Dortmund, you know, and then obviously Conte, to an extent, I've got to tell you, Claudio, doesn't make a ton of sense to me because he's so pragmatic in his style. But a guy like Maurizio Sarri, I mean, this is like a gem of gold for a guy like Sadi. I mean, it just makes sense for him to go to one of those three teams. I would imagine Inter would be fourth on Tonali's list if he had his choice, don't you think?
Yeah, yes and no, because if you remember when Conte took over at Juventus, mm-hmm. Pirlo was on that team, and Pirlo played a big role in that first Scudetto winning team for Juve, and when was it, 2011-2012, and Conte kind of anchored Pirlo with two more athletic midfielders like Vidal and eventually Paul Pogba. So I think Conte really, he could make use of him. Like you said, if I were Tonali, I probably would want to go to Juve, you know, because Juve is a huge club. Sadi obviously plays a style that's more suited to him to fit right into right away. And I just think Juve need that kind of player in the midfield because Pjanic, I like Pjanic. I think he's a good player. But I think Juve could do better in terms of creativity and vision than Pjanic. And, you know, I think Tonali is somebody who is young and could see himself fitting right into Juve. You know, and then as far as the foreign teams like PSG and Manchester City, who wouldn't want to play for Guardiola, you know? But when you go to Manchester City, you're obviously going to be fighting for your spot in the starting 11, and you might not have consistent playing time. So that, to me, is not a wise move for a youngster like Tonali. And then PSG could do what they did with Verratti. You know, they signed Verratti right from Pescara at a young age, and he's worked out terrifically for them over the course of these many, many years. So, you know, that could be interesting because Tonali, if I'm picking where I'm going, like he would be, you know, you see what happened with PSG and Verratti, and maybe if the money is right, that's not a terrible option either. But I would say Juventus are probably the favorites in his mind, and Inter, you know, wouldn't be a terrible option because Conte did have that experience with Andrea Pirlo.
And part of my comments are meant to piss off Nima Tavale because he and I are both, we're both, you know, members of the Sandro Tonali fan club. And it's just going to be a matter of which one of us arm wrestles each other out of it for Tonali's services at this point. So I was hoping, you know, hopefully he comes to Juve. Claudio, before we let you go, where can everyone find your work?
Yes. So the best place to find me is on Twitter at CPerfetto11. That's my handle, and that's the best place to follow me because over there you could see all my Demarcio transfer stuff and everything else I do that are more opinion-based pieces as well if you're interested in hearing me. But that's the best place. Just go to the Twitter page.
Awesome. Great stuff. Again, thanks for joining us tonight, and I look forward to having you back again soon.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy being on, as always, and talk to you soon, all right?
All right, grazie. And thanks again to Claudio Perfetto from Gianluca Di Marzio for joining us on the show and going through some interesting transfer news, especially to say the least, with the closing stuff there. Rob, let's stick with the Serie A real quick, because I want to talk about Ciro Immobile for a second. I know that when we talk about strikers, we always talk about Cristiano Ronaldo, we talk about Leo Messi, we talk about, you know, golden boots in terms of winning for all of Europe. I feel almost like, though, Ciro Immobile has kind of gone sight unseen. He's currently leading all scorers in Europe with 23 goals, including a hat trick on the weekend. He was the other big hat trick we saw this weekend. You know, he's currently 3 goals ahead of Robert Lewandowski, who, if you remember correctly, Rob, got out to what did he score in his first 5 or 6 matches of the season for Bayern
Munich?
Yeah,
that's right.
Some crazy number. Timo Werner is up there with him as well, tied with 20 goals. So we've got a lot of goals coming out of Germany. Jamie Vardy currently leading the way at 17 goals. Obviously, we saw Sergio Aguero have a big weekend. The absence of Harry Kane now for the rest of the season, you won't see him contributing to that number. And rounding up the top 5 right now, Cristiano Ronaldo with the brace on the weekend as well. He's at 16 goals and kind of trying to stick his nose back into the race. But the one thing I want to talk to you about Ciro Immobile going back, because he is on pace right now to break Gonzalo Higuain's record for goals scored in the Serie A, which is currently at 36. You know, Lazio in the battle here. They're in the mix for this Serie A's title. They did win the Coppa Italia. They're the only team to beat Juventus so far this year, if you think about it, doing it twice. Is Ciro Immobile, what has to happen for at least to have Ciro Immobile in the Ballon d'Or discussion at the end of the year? I mean, is this going to involve, you know, winning the Scudetto and going and having a deep run in the Euros for Italy? Is this going to involve him scoring 50 goals, which I don't think is attainable at this point, but some insane number like that? I mean, what needs to happen for him to be in the conversation?
Unfortunately, I don't think he will be in the conversation no matter what he does. I just think that there's just so many roadblocks, and this is no credit. This is no fault to him, because he's just playing he's just doing what he's doing and playing for Lazio and for the Italian national team. But yeah, I think a long-term shot, I mean, you know, it really has to be a big, big season for him. I mean, and it's sad because, you know, Lazio, they're not in the, believe it or not, in the round of 16 of the Europa League. So you can't have that from a European perspective. I think something big, to win the Scudetto, to win Coppa Italia and to win the Euros, but have a very, very good shot and like have a great tournament. I'm talking like golden boots, big influencer, that kind of thing. Then he might be in that discussion. I don't think he would win it, but I think he would definitely be in that kind of discussion. And that's how I see it. I think it's I think the standards are now just so high at the moment for a Ballon d'Or that, you know, if you're not playing in said stage and said tournament, you know, you can't be considered. I mean, compare a Kylian Mbappe, who, let's face it, if he did the same thing that, and I believe he's leading all of Liga, if I'm not mistaken, Joe, I'll have to double check. But if you look at kind of the same situation that he's in, sorry, yes, 13 goals. You know, he's right there. If he picks up the golden boot, he wins Liga, you know, if wins the Champions League, then wins the Euros with France. You know, even if that was the same case for Ciro Immobile, you still have to factor Mbappe for that kind of thing. So I think it's a victim of his own success for Ciro Immobile. But I think from an Italian, or at least from a Lazio perspective, I think it'd be a great achievement for him to be in that Ballon d'Or list. But there's just so much that has to be done in order to be considered for that, which is unfortunate because I really like him. He's becoming one of those like fine players that have done well in the later half of their career, even though he's not really that old. He's still technically in the prime of his career. You know, he's done brilliantly, and if he does break that record that Higuain held of the 36 goals, I mean, that'd be an incredible achievement for someone playing for Lazio, honestly. Yeah.
And you know, it's tough. We always talk about Messi and Ronaldo in these instances, and obviously they would still be in the mix, especially given the Champions League where they are. But let me ask you this, in terms of Messi being part of that Ballon d'Or discussion, does not having the eyeballs of the Euro on him, because obviously he's Argentinian, could that potentially hurt his ability to win the Ballon d'Or again this year?
No, because he has the Copa America.
Okay. So he'll have something to go for. And obviously returning a Copa America for Argentina is something he has not done yet. So it would be a huge achievement. Yep. So again, you know, just like the criteria for Ronaldo, you know, winning that international tournament, winning the top scorer in the league, you know, maybe winning Champions League, those would be the kinds of things that would put him over the top. And unfortunately, Immobile just doesn't have the Champions League that spot to go to, right? So because of the elimination from Europa, I think even if he did it in Europa, I think that would go a long ways for him. But unfortunately, it's going to mask an incredible season that he's turning in right now. But we'll have to see. I mean, maybe he does score 50 goals. And maybe people talk about him differently because they make a big run in the Euros. But well, I know it's still early, but just an incredible achievement to be leading Europe at the halfway point of the 2019-2020 season. You never expect it from him with all these other great players there, especially a guy like Lewandowski and the start he got out to. But it's certainly an interesting follow to happen from here moving forward, no doubt about it. So
definitely.
Let's talk about you know, let's go back to Barcelona now that we've talked about a little bit of Barca. One thing we didn't get to talk about last week because we were off was Quique Setién taking over for Ernesto Valverde. You know, you and I have talked about Valverde losing his job, but it hadn't happened. I think you and I, to a man, we thought it might have happened last summer where it would have made more sense. But they move him here and for Valverde to start. You know, he returned, I believe, 3 trophies to Barca in his time there. I want to say it was 3. It might be 4. You know, he's currently leading the way in La Liga. He won his group in Champions League. I mean, this guy, you know, now he's losing Luis Suarez for the rest of the season, or he would have lost him. This guy just really, I know it's, you and I have talked about this all the time, it's a what have you done for me lately kind of world, but the guy's done pretty good. You know, he doesn't play in the style, or he doesn't coach in the style that I think Barca is expectant of, right? And I think that was part of his detriment. And now fast forward to Quique Setién and what he brings. We'll talk about that in a minute. But do you think that they didn't do him a solid in terms of Valverde by releasing him or letting him go the way they did?
Well, no, because I feel like not the what have you done for me lately, but the how do you do it. I think that's the new motto when it comes to Barcelona. It's just they're a club that they are obviously the Mexican club, the more than a club motto. The fact that they had these legendary coaches, Cruyff, Guardiola, even Enrique to an extent, who played beautifully, you know, and got the results. With Valverde's case, the fact that the way that they are playing is just not Barca football. If you get what I'm saying, it's not the way that they like to play. Because of that, even though you could return silverware in that case, but it's just, I think when it comes to Barca, and this is the case for a lot of clubs, really. We can give or take a Manchester City or a Juventus or a PSG or a Real Madrid, you know. You want to win all the titles. You want to win that treble. But you also have to do it beautifully. And there's other exceptions, obviously. I think that's a bit unfortunate of the case of the pressures of being the Barca manager. It's not only winning, but winning beautifully. Which, let's face it, Joe, I mean, if you were the head boss of Barcelona and, you know, you're returning titles but not getting the Champions League, and you're playing, but you're not playing beautifully, I mean, you have to think to yourself, what are you still doing with him? Yeah. It's an unfortunate case that he has to be in because, you know, returning those silverware is more than expected for a team that has dominated Spanish football, at least from a domestic standpoint, for a better half of 15 years. And, you know, for this to be treated like this, it's the sad part of, I guess, football in itself and the whole tribalism kind of thing. You know, it's not the way of how you win and that kind of stuff, but winning it beautifully, winning it the way that Barca have been known and have demonstrated to themselves for various years, the entire world.
Now, fast forward to this weekend, because Setién, you know, it's his first match taking over at Barcelona, and he really kind of put his stamp on it, I think. If you look at the stats, I believe what I saw correctly, Barcelona attempted 1,000 passes in the match on the weekend which was that, you know, a very close 1-0 victory over Granada. I think they had 80% possession. They completed, I want to say, almost 90% of their passes. This was the third highest total that I think I saw in the last 10 years or something like that. The last two times, or the third highest total ever for amount of passes in a match for Barcelona. The other two were under Pep Guardiola. So immediately, we've seen a Barcelona return to the Guardiola Barca, and that was a very dangerous Barca. That's a treble-winning Barca. And, you know, we kind of questioned, is Setién the right guy for the job? I also want to go down the road just quickly about Xavi, who interviewed for the job and apparently turned the job down. So, first, let's start from the Setién angle. I mean, is this what Barca needs right now?
Well, I think when it comes to managers who come in with no experience of, or at least like no trophies, you can look at Guardiola, you can look at Rijkaard, you can look at Luis Enrique, who obviously had the reputation as a manager, but they didn't return any trophies. Valverde, I believe he returned multiple trophies as a manager, so the expectation really comes in as well. And really, I feel as if though with Setién, you know, maybe there really isn't that much pressure. I think you know you want to put your feet wet and go on from there. And I think the way that his style has been playing in comparison with what he did in his past teams,
right,
it's rightly deserved. And he's experienced as well. He knows how to manage La Liga sides. Whereas for Xavi, you know, he just got into the job, got into coaching over there in Qatar just last year. For him to make that jump to Barcelona so soon, that could ruin his reputation in a way. Right. It really can.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting to me because you would have expected Xavi to just take that job, but I think, like you said, you know, he's just getting into coaching. That the Barca job is a massive job, and he's really a Barca legend. So I don't think he wanted to jump in. And for me, Rob, my thing would be, I don't want to take over a club in the middle of this winter transfer window. Do you know what I mean? Where you can't go in and you can't kind of pick and choose your players a little bit. You really become the definition of caretaker at a job like Barcelona when you step in at this time of the year. And I don't know if that went through Setién's mind, but I've got a feeling that did partially go through Xavi's mind. And I think Xavi, is he going to be the coach of the future? He might be. But obviously, for whatever reason, it just didn't work out this time. But Setién, certainly, if this weekend's match was any reflection of what he brings to the table for Barca and where he points Barca in the direction that was kind of an old direction, but a Barca direction, then I think the people of Barcelona are going to be pretty happy with the choice of Setién, at least at minimum as a caretaker and possibly something as a long-term solution, depending on what he brings to the trophy case at the end of the season, don't you think?
Well, he's not a caretaker. He's a permanent manager.
Right. I mean, he's signed permanently, but he's only as permanent as long as the front office wants to keep him, right? Because they could literally fire him any day now. You know, so that's what,
yeah,
I mean.
but that also wouldn't be a good look on them.
No,
I mean, they could do that. Yes, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. But if that's going to happen, it has to be a season where they don't return anything.
Yeah, of course. But I would say that your job is only as safe as the next day in a place like that.
Absolutely.
When you're not Pep Guardiola, when you're not Zinedine Zidane, you know, when you're not a guy like Max Allegri, right? Your job is only as safe as next week. And I think that's the case for right now for Setién until he either consistently demonstrates what they did this weekend or he returns titles to Barca, don't you think?
Yes, I agree.
So going to be interesting to watch for sure. Let's move on. Let's talk about dominance then, right? We'll go from the dominance of Barcelona to the dominance of Liverpool in the Premier League. As Liverpool currently stand, they are I didn't look at the exact points. Just real quick, some math. They are currently 16 points ahead of Manchester City with, I believe, one match at hand. It might be two. It is one match at hand. So they're currently 16 points ahead with one match at hand against Manchester City. I know we've already said the Liverpool League, you know, the EPL is done and dusted. I think we've all kind of determined that. 21 wins on 22 matches, one sole draw in league right now. The question kicked up with you and I this weekend, where we talked about the potential of Liverpool to not lose this season, right? To go unbeaten in the Premier League. It's an interesting thought if you really look back on it, because we've got some good teams. It's not like we have slouch teams in the Premier League, but their dominance, Liverpool is playing at such a different level, even on the weekend here with the 1-0, with the 2-0 victory over United, where they were dominant. I think I saw a stat, I want to say in the first half, Liverpool had 8 corner kicks and United had none. So this is, they were dominant all the way around. They've been dominant, even though they've won 1-0. They won 1-0 against Tottenham, 2-0 against United, 2-0 against Sheffield United, 1-0 against Wolves. They're winning close matches, right? But they're a team that knows how to win at this point, and they're so in tune with playing with each other. Do you see them, Rob, losing a match in league between now and the end of the season?
You know, I was having this discussion with a friend the other day about it. The thing about the Premier League is, even though there's just so much the standards of how teams are collectively, like the Gulf of Talent, there is always that shock. And we saw it even this weekend with Newcastle, you know, the fact that they were able to park the bus to Chelsea over 90 minutes, but then it was that goal from Isaac Hayden that gave them the results over there. And results like that, I mean, can it happen? Yes. But I just feel like they also have to deal with so much. I mean, their depth is great. You have to admit that for every Mane, you have a Shaqiri, you know, and for every Salah, there's a Divaoraji. There's so much depth in this team.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, they're still in the Champions League, where they're still one of the favorites to win it. You worry about how these players will fare out, how much much they got left in the legs in these type of matches. It really is. It's going to be tough. I mean, if you want my personal opinion, I think no. I think they're going to lose a game. I don't know who it will be. I don't know if there really is a team that is going. Like you said, Joe, when we had this conversation yesterday, it has to be one big fluke. And I think that one big fluke will happen. I just don't know who it could be. I really don't know. It has to be someone completely out of the ordinary.
I put a little more thought into this question over the past 24 hours, like you said, since you and I talked about it. And, you know, at first I said no. I said they're not going to lose because there's nobody capable of beating them, right? But then I thought about the same lines that you're thinking about right now, that the wear and tear of the FA Cup, the wear and tear of Champions League, the wear and tear of the Premier League. There's so many matches on these legs, and they do have very, very good depth, okay? But it is not, they are not super deep. And this is also a team that did not make any moves in the transfer window in the summer. And they, you know, to this point, they really haven't made any in the winter either. So I went ahead and looked at their schedule. Right now, where they stand, mathematically, they need a combination of 10 wins or City losses to win the EPL title. So
that's right.
I know we've arrived at a point realistically where they've won the title. We have not arrived at that point mathematically, but we're almost there. So then I went and looked at their schedule. They've got, not giving you Homer away, they've got West Ham, they've got Southampton, they've got Norwich, West Ham again, Watford, Bournemouth, Everton, and Palace. 8 wins in league. I think I don't see any of those teams, maybe the Everton match, because it's such a massive derby, you know, with the Merseyside derby there, that there is potential to have it happen there as kind of the banana skin, right, that we're talking about right now. Once they hit those 8 matches, then they get City at the Etihad, and that match I believe is, I want to say, April 4th. From there, at that point, they could pretty much may have already locked up the league. The question is, like you said, what do we have for mileage on our legs? Do we have, you know, a lot of time? Do we have a FA Cup semifinal? Do we have Champions League round of quarterfinals or semifinals? Do we have all those other competitions that could potentially make the City match a slip up point? So, To your point, at first I said no. I'm going to say yes now, where I think they will lose at least one. I might even go as far as to say they'll lose two, Rob. When they close the end of the season, so you've got the Everton, you've got the Merseyside derby, right, that we talked about. That's a potential banana skin. The City match is a banana skin, but at this point the league will certainly be done and dusted. But they close the season with Arsenal at home, on the road, Chelsea at home, and Newcastle on the road. So we've got three more matches that are very, very difficult, but they're also going to be, Rob, three matches that will be played after the league is won mathematically for me, right? And matches that will be played with potential Champions League matches to come with them midweek. So from that standpoint, if they don't lose at Everton, I've got to say they will lose at City. And I think they will lose at least one of those three matches at the end of the season. So can they do it? Absolutely they can. We're seeing them play on a level that is unprecedented in the Premier League. Will they do it? I don't think so, because there is so much weight on them from all the other competitions that I really think at this point Jurgen Klopp wants to return a treble, you know, return the FA Cup, return the Premier League, which he's all but done and dusted, and return the Champions League and go down as one of those, rival one of those greatest teams of all time, rival the Milans that we've seen, rival the Barca.
Yeah, this could be the beginning of a dynasty.
It's
which is kind of weird, because you think about how City were so dominant in the Premier League, but the one thing that they couldn't win was that Champions League.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, many people were thinking, oh, it's going to be a dynasty for Manchester City because they won all those titles domestically. They didn't win the big years. They didn't win the Champions League.
Yep.
Whereas Liverpool, on the other hand, they're well in that spot, and they are a much better side than Manchester City, that's for sure. They're younger, they're better, they have more depth, and for me, this could go down as one of the more big historic English clubs in history.
Right, but history brings pressure. That's
of
for
course,
sure.
No and doubt about and it. When you're Liverpool, there is a lot of pressure. You know, you can't get any bigger. Well, you can, but at least in England, you can't get any bigger than that.
Right.
When you're the most successful team in English football, or one of them at least.
One of them at least, no doubt about it. So it'll be interesting to see as we follow the story along. I know next week we have Jerry Mancini coming on, and Jerry obviously does a lot with Lazio, but Jerry's also an EPL expert. So I think maybe if we can remember to table this question and throw it at him and get his thoughts on it as well, I think that'd be pretty interesting to talk about. So, so Rob, let's table our discussions for tonight. We've got some decent matches to come up this week, and you have the trivia question, my friend.
Yes, I do. So the trivia question is as simple as it.
Let's do matches. Let's do matches first.
Yes. Sorry. Yes. yes. The matches of the week. Just a quick reminder: the Copa Libertadores is back. Only about a little over a month ago, we had our new champion Flamengo, but it's going back all again in the first stage for the matches of the Copa Libertadores, and we'll definitely give you the coverage as the tournament continues on. But on Tuesday, we have some EPL action. We have a London derby. We have Chelsea taking on Arsenal at 3:15 p.m. On Saturday, we have some league action. We have La Liga in Barcelona looking to continue their run with the new manager, Quique Setién, taking on Valencia at 10 a.m. In the Bundesliga, we have Bayern Munich, a team that, you know, even though they were off to a bad start, I guess, in the Bundesliga, they freely found form, and they're really stuck their nose in this league race. They take on Schalke at 12:30. On Sunday, we have Liga action between Lille and PSG at 3 p.m. And on Sunday as well, we'll also be talking with Jerry as well. It's the Rome Derby. It's Roma against Lazio at noon, lunchtime. Get your food and whatnot. This is going to be a good one.
Absolutely. So, trivia question, my friend. Give it back to me.
Yes. So, the simple trivia question was, Messi scored over the weekend. It's going another great goal. But the simple trivia question that I have for you is, in Messi's last 500 games in a Barcelona shirt, how many goals has he scored?
And, you know, this is obviously a tough one. And you kind of gave a half hint earlier from the Messi-Ronaldo comparison. So I'm going to say, because he was at like something like 600 goals and 800 matches is what you said. So, but I'm going to guess that a lot of those were on his, early in the year. So a lot of the games, or early in his career, a lot of the games, but not a lot of the goals. So I'm going to give you a number, a total, obviously spitball, but I'm going to go 473.
You're a bit close, but no.
Ah.
It's not 473.
All right. Am I over or under?
You are under.
I'm under. Wow. So let's go 486.
Under.
Still under. Are we over 500?
No.
Okay. So got to be 492.
Under.
Still under. 496.
Under.
498.
Under.
499.
500.
500 goals?
500 goals in his last 500 games.
It's an amazing, amazing stat to have exactly 500 and 500. That is, he should retire.
not yet, but that's wow. That's incredible. 500, and you think about it, there have been games where he hasn't scored, so that number must have been higher in his last few games.
Crazy, absolutely crazy numbers. So, all right, my friend. Without any further ado, let's hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. And for episode 269 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Claudio Perfetto for joining us. Next week, we will have Jerry Mancini joining us to talk Rome Derby. We're going to talk EPL with him and give you all the live action that comes up midweek and on the weekend. So for episode 269 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.